We learn more about mental illness all the time, it seems. We still struggle to get people to proper treatment, but we know more about how to treat them than ever before. Today's guest learned by trial and error what does and does not work in treating certain types of mental illness. Sherry Joyner is a longtime Oregonian. She grew up in the Roseburg area, attended what was then Southern Oregon College in Ashland and Oregon State University in Corvallis, and she also spent some time in the Oregon State Hospital. Her journey through mental illness and treatment to stability is told in her book, Sherry Goes Sane, Living a Life with Schizoaffective Disorder. Sherry Joyner is a certified nurse's aide and a one-time preschool teacher. She has written and spoken extensively about mental illness, many of those speaking engagements on behalf of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Sherry Joyner, thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you for inviting me.
It's one thing to tell your story to a group of people, but it's quite another to write a whole book about this. What was your motivation here?
My motivation was to let people know that had schizoaffective disorder and mental illness in general that they can live a happy and meaningful and useful life. I wanted to show that people with schizoaffective disorder could make it in the real world without the hallucinations, the despair, the depression, by seeing counselors, doctors, and taking medication.
And so I'm sure a lot of people are not terribly familiar with schizoaffective disorder. It sounds like it's really a mashup, in a sense, of different kinds of mental illness.
Yes, schizoaffective disorder is a combination of paranoid schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. With paranoid schizophrenia, I have extreme paranoia, hallucinations, grandeur illusions, thinking my dreams are real, and lack of concentration. With bipolar disorder, I have extreme up and down mood swings and depression. With the bipolar disorder, I go from mania to depression, and I have, because of lack of sleep, and I'll have psychosis going on, and then I'll drop down into depression really bad and crying my eyes out. And then during schizoaffective disorder, I may switch from schizophrenia to bipolar disorder back and forth with mania and depression and the psychosis going on all the time.
Then on this basis, I guess I can understand why it took a while to figure out what the proper course of treatment was for you or for anybody else, for that matter, with schizoaffective disorder.
Yes. They found a good cocktail for me. they found a cocktail of giodone, Seroquel, and lithium, and it works. It's a wonder drug for me, all three of them. And I sleep well. I eat well. I don't go off my medication. I take my medication regularly. And I view my life as a cycle from winter to spring. In the wintertime, the verdant green trees drop their, store up all this energy. Then they rest and they drop their frail limbs. Then they bloom again in the spring. And then in the wintertime, the days grow shorter and I store up all this energy. Then I rest. Then I work through my problems and deal with my problems. And I bloom again in the blues, pinks, and yellows and greens of the spring. And I'm always learning, and I'm always growing, and I'm always blooming.
But it took a while to get to this point from the sounds of it.
Yes, it did. It took trial and error, going off my medication, hitchhiking, going to jail, all of that. Being off my medication was the main thing that brought me to my senses that I couldn't make it without my medication.
You begin the book with going to Salem, and you put some weight in that phrase, going to Salem, not as in going to Salem to go to the state capitol, but in this case to go to the state mental hospital,
yes.
Which obviously has been downsized a bit since that time. Why, in the first place, were you sent to Salem?
I was sent to Salem because I had entered college, and I worked through my way through college for about 3.5 years, and I fought for equal pay, and my employer laid me off for fighting for equal pay, and I won my case. However, my stepdad abused me at Christmas time, and I became confused, paranoid, and depressed, and I did have my parents, my stepdad and my mother, had trouble with drinking, and they took it out on us kids. And all through my life, my mom went on these wild drunks and kicked me out of the house when I was a teenager and packed my suitcases and told me to leave. And once she abandoned me in San Jose. And all the stress that was built up from this childhood abuse and the hospitalizations, it caused me to go to Salem. It was the stress, and I just cracked. I lost my cool.
So you were in your 20s at the time? I was
21.
21. We'll talk much more with Sherry Joyner. Her book is Sherry Goes Sane, Living a Life with Schizoaffective Disorder. We'll learn more about schizoaffective disorder generally and how it affected Sherry specifically and the avenue of treatment that finally got her back on a fairly stable ground. We'll talk more with Sherry Joyner and you with your phone calls and emails when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 30. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Sherry Joyner, a longtime Oregonian and a longtime sufferer of mental illness with schizoaffective disorder, which is a combination of paranoid schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, not the sort of mashup anybody wishes for. She's written a book about her experiences called Sherry Goes Sane, Living a Life with Schizoaffective Disorder. You can join our discussion on the Exchange about her particular case and mental illness treatments more broadly. 800-838-3760, our phone number across the region. In the Rogue Valley, it's 541-552-6782. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Sherry, so we just got into a bit about the alcoholism at home and the bad treatment of the kids. I mean, set the scene for us. You lived in the Green District just outside of Roseburg.
Yes, I did.
How many kids in your family, and what was your birth family growing up? It did not involve your father, I gather, most of the time.
There was my sister and I and my brother, my half-brother, Doug. And I had my real father around for 2 years, and then he left after I had polio when I was young.
Polio, really?
Yes, I had polio in my legs, and I was crippled, and I had polio in my back when I was 7.
Wow, and do you have any lingering effects from the polio to this day?
No, I don't. My mom enrolled me in tap dancing, swimming, and roller skating to strengthen my legs, and so I got uniquely strong physically and mentally throughout the years, and I don't have any overlap from it, except for I'm experiencing post-polio syndrome right now.
Well, it sounds like your mother was really the central character in your upbringing, in a very big way, and not necessarily in a good way fairly often. But, I mean, do you remember good periods in your relationship with her as a little kid?
Yes, I remember that she used to work at the candy factory, and she'd bring back candy, ribbon candy, Christmas candy to us when we were young, and she'd hide them in these wooden sitting boxes that had the aroma of cherry, cinnamon, and hickory circulating in the air and magically spiraling around. And then she sewed us clothes when we were young, too. And we were in the Oregon Centennial celebration in Roseburg when we moved over from Salt Lake City, Utah. And she made flowered printed dresses and pantaloons for us, and we marched in the parade with people who dressed up like Patrick Henry and Sacagawea and Lewis and Clark.
So definitely good times in those periods, but when she was, you know, when you're acting, functioning as a family, and she was functioning as a mother. But then you also made a reference before we hit the break about her dropping you off in San Jose. So in a sense, she was taking you to see your father, but in the most unorthodox way possible, it seems.
She took me on a trip to Disneyland with my stepdad, who was her boyfriend at the time, and my brother, and we ended up in San Jose, and she said my father lived there, and I had a picture of my father because I hadn't seen him when I was two, and I always kept it with me in my pocket. And I said I wanted to see my father, my real father. And so they stopped in San Jose, and she kicked me out of the car, and she said, go find him. And so I just walked the streets, and everything was desolate, and I was just really sad. And I walked down railroad tracks trying to get my senses together, and then I walked up some streets, and I knew that my dad played pool. She had told me he played pool a long time ago. So I walked into this one place at the door entrance of a tavern, and I saw a man there, and I looked at my picture, and it looked like my father. And he looked at me, and he said, Sherry, and he came up to me, and he hadn't seen me for 11 years. So,
was there any repercussion back to your mother for the way she dumped you in San Jose?
No. She met us. He put me on a bus to Salt Lake City, Utah, and she met us there with her husband. But she didn't try that again. I think she felt guilty, but she didn't show it.
Sherry Joyner is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Sherry Goes Sane, Living a Life with Schizoaffective Disorder. Here's Jacob and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Sherry Joyner.
Hi, good morning, Jeffrey. Thank you for your story, Sherry. I wanted to just point out just general treatment for mental illness and why our model is wrong in this country. That if you have a mental illness, okay, it's not like pneumonia. You will never be cured. It's a chronic disease, and you'll probably always have it until you die. And the only way to handle it is actually just to manage the disease, to manage a chronic illness, to mitigate the effects of the disease. And I would say that a lot of these people, if they had things like a purpose in life, if they were occupied with a job or something that kept them busy, if they had a reason to be, to do exercise and to eat regularly and to eat well and take responsibility for something in their life, they would actually do a lot better than if they didn't. You know,
I would
point out that there are millions of people who have something called PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, that are kind of similar to what Sherry has. It's sort of a schizoaffective disorder, affects mood and can even cause schizophrenia type symptoms. And I want to just propose this $1 million idea on how to cure them. And it's just getting something as simple as a puppy. You know, if you had a puppy and you're responsible for that puppy, you had to walk that puppy, and whenever the puppy was in distress, you had to look after that puppy, you kind of don't remember about yourself. And you actually have a purpose in life, and then you start to live for that puppy and then to exercise and to eat right and everything else. And, you know, instead of just taking medication, people need a purpose in life. And I know it sounds stupid and simple, but, you know, a puppy can cheer you up more than any medication can.
It is something to focus on outside yourself, as you pointed out. A sense of purpose is the general theme of what Jacob was talking about. Sherry, compare notes with Jacob, would you?
I think that he's got a good point there. Animals are very healing to people who have mental illness. But my mental illness is a very serious kind of mental illness. It's a kind of mental illness where people with this mental illness commit really bad crimes, and a puppy would be good for a person that in that respect, or painting, or just carrying on a hobby, or maintaining relationships with other people. But also medication has helped me, and that's as far as I know. I can function on medication. I cannot function without medication.
You mentioned painting. That has actually been something that's helped you focus your attention in meaningful ways, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, I am an oil painter. I'm an accomplished artist in Portland, Oregon. And I have my paintings in the Oregon Society of Artists galleries. about twice a year, and I exhibit my paintings in the Music and Art for the Mind show for North Star, which is a vocational rehabilitation clubhouse, and for NAMI.
For NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Sherry Joyner is our guest again on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Sherry Goes Sane, Living a Life with Schizoaffective Disorder, a combination of paranoid schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about Sherry's particular situation or mental illness and its treatment more generally. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Peter in Ashland dropped off a question. He wants to know what sorts of changes, if any, you might have made over the years, trying out things like changes in nutrition or using meditation or yoga or anything else that might have helped outside of what appears to be the medical track.
Yeah, I use meditation regularly. Listen to self-affirmation tapes by Louise Hayes. I teach meditation in a psych ward. I'm a lecturer in the psych ward, and I help people with meditation. One of the things mainly I get from meditation is forgiveness and learning to forgive my past and learning to forgive the people who have hurt me and what I've done in the past. And I went over to Jao Pessoa, which was the tip end of northern end of Brazil, and I'm half Portuguese, and my mom's full-blooded Portuguese Brazilian, and I was so infatuated with the light tan, golden bronze, leather black faces in the crowds, and the multitudes of prejudices hadn't sunk into the culture yet, and I was feeling an overwhelming sense of pride and harmony and wellness. And this wave of, I went swimming in the warm turquoise Atlantic Ocean, and this wave of forgiveness came over my head. And I looked back on the United States and all the animosity I had as a teacher with the children, and all the resentment and pent-up feelings I had with my mom and the conflicts I had with other people, and everything seemed so minute. And so this wave of forgiveness brought a vacancy. It brought a forgiveness in my heart for other people that I not necessarily had to go up to people and say, I forgive you, but to have it forgiveness in my heart for what had been done. And I use this tool in my writing my book, Sherry Goes Sane. It was the main tool I used in writing Sherry Goes Sane. It was forgiveness. And I also used it as writing an essay when I came back from Brazil to the United States in an essay called My Favorite City and Why. And it was published by Elder Lemer Publishers in the Authors of Tomorrow book. And
so when was that? I mean, when in your life did you make this trip to Brazil that that really sort of let the feeling of forgiveness settle into you?
I took a trip in 2004.
Mm-hmm. So you were well along in life by then, very, very much an adult into middle age. What age did you begin to first come apart, Sherry? I mean, when was it clear that things were not working out for you well mentally?
I think when I was 21, it wasn't working out mentally. When I was going to school and all the trouble I had with the employer and the trouble I had with my stepfather.
Mm-hmm. So that was when you were committed to the state hospital. But were there any incidents while you were still going to high school, for example?
Yes, when I was 16, I was a high school cheerleader, and my science teacher saw me nod off in class, and he yelled, "Hey, Sherry Stanley, wake up." And I ran to the school's lavatory, and I screamed at the top of my lungs, "I'm falling in a big hole, and I can't stand it anymore." And so I thought people were talking about me, and I was being sarcastic to everybody. And this was about the first bout of paranoia I had.
Right. So definitely a track that was established by age 16 and then just got progressively worse from the sounds of it until committed at age 21.
Yeah.
And so when did you finally hit on the cocktail that worked for you, the three drugs you mentioned?
In 2007.
All right, so not terribly long ago, so a good 30 years after that first commitment.
Yes.
All right, we have some calls for you. Sherry Goes Sane is the book. Sherry Joyner, the author and our guest. Here is John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, let's have your guest talk about the spectrum of disorders. Now, it sounds like her, she was probably way over on the stronger side of it, but all these disorders I know have a big variance, you know, like a young person I know, a very young person has autism, and they're kind of in the middle. You know, there are the kids, you know, this young man's not banging his head against the wall or anything like that. But anyway, that's my question, the spectrum of disorders and where she kind of fit on this. And I think you.
All right. Thanks for that, John. Appreciate it. So the spectrum of people with schizoaffective disorder, I mean, is yours a middling case, a mild case? What?
I think there is. I think there are milder cases of schizoaffective disorder. Some people with schizoaffective disorder can function mildly on a lesser dose of medication or just one medication. And it just depends, really.
Mm-hmm. And there must have been a fair amount of tinkering before they got to the three-drug cocktail that you now take.
Pardon me?
There must have been a fair amount of tinkering with different types. I don't know. I don't mean to minimize the effects of or the efforts of the doctors who were trying to prescribe medications for you, but they must have adjusted your cocktail many times before they finally settled on the current three drugs you take.
Well, I'd say about five times.
Mm-hmm. All right, so not so many.
There was, I was a test study for a drug of schizophrenia headed by Ward T. Smith, M.D., and I was transitioning from one drug to the other because that program had closed. And so when I got to one drug, I was able to take it for 3 years, and then it lost its effect on me, and I was becoming fat and depressed, and I had suicidal thoughts, and so my drug was spiraling, my disease was spiraling, and that's when I was diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder, and then I was put on Geodone, and that's been a wonder drug for me. I had a seizure transitioning from the Zyprexa to the Geodone, and I also was taking Lipitor and drinking grapefruit juice, so that could have caused my seizure also. So it was just a combination of things that happened at that one time.
Well, let's take another call.
And I decided to stay with it because I wanted this drug to help me, and I wanted to be successful with this drug. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't have been as successful as I am today without it.
All right, let's take another call. We have Holly and Arcata on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Sherry Joyner. Her book is Sherry Goes Sane.
Hi. Thank you for the very, very informative show. However, I just want to object to the gentleman who suggested that people with mental illness should get puppies. And, you know, in my experience, puppies and all animals need a consistent love, care, food, water, walking, consistent. And people who are struggling with mental illness don't have that ability to provide that consistency. And I just object to the marginalization of animals or, you know, thinking that they're a panacea or they can be treated as an object where they're living things that have a lot of rights and mm-hmm. and deserve consistent care.
Well,
thank
get
you.
A puppy would certainly not be the answer for everyone. Thanks for that, Holly. Appreciate it. Sherry, do you have a pet? Have you had a pet in that capacity?
I had a pet named Dinky, and he came over from Panama with his sweetheart, Sweetie, who was a Cocker Spaniel. And when Sweetie was sick and dying, I was crying, and Dinky put his paw over my right eye to stop me from crying. And I knew that I had love and acceptance then, and I took care of that pet for 17 years, and he kept me out of the hospital for 17 years. So He was just a wonderful, magical dog to me. I just loved every minute to be with him. But I had time to take care of him. I worked. I was a nurse's aide for a while he was living with me, and I was also a teacher. So.
All right, so it worked for you, but as Holly points out, probably not the best case for everybody.
Yeah, that's true. Everybody's different.
All right, Sherry Joyner is our guest. Her book is Sherry Goes Sane. We'll come back and talk more with her and take more of your phone calls and emails when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. It's the final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking to Sherry Joyner, longtime Oregonian and the author of a book about her bouts with mental illness, her long, long history with mental illness. Her book is called Sherry Goes Sane, Living a Life with Schizoaffective Disorder, which is a combination of bipolar disorder and paranoid schizophrenia, with all of the disadvantages of each. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about Sherry's history or the handling of mental illness more generally in this country. Our phone number is here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Sherry, we talked just a bit about your working as a nurse's aide and a preschool teacher at different times. Have there been long periods when you were not able to hold a job because your mental illness just interfered?
When I was transferring from Zyprexa to Geodone, I had to stay away from work for about a month. I had quit my job because I was working with an Alzheimer's unit, and it was too difficult for me to work graveyard and work with Alzheimer's people.
All right. So other than that, though, but you've had some interesting jobs over the years. Yeah, and as you point out in the book, you actually worked as a stripper for a time.
Yes, I worked as a stripper. I enjoyed that. I worked for a theatrical agency. Was Mark and Eddie's theatrical agency in Portland, Oregon, and I enjoyed dancing because I enjoyed being with that type of artwork, and loving music and just doing my own thing on stage.
There was more performance art for you from the way you describe it.
Pardon me?
It was more like performance art for you.
Yes, it was. It was a performance to me.
So we talked about your ability to hold a job, which has generally been okay. But then, I mean, you obviously had enough going on intellectually. You got through high school. You got to college. You went to what was then SOC, Southern Oregon College, now Southern Oregon University in Ashland. So did you do pretty well in school through high school?
I did really. I did average grades in high school. I think my system of dealing with pressure began to erode, and I was becoming an empty shell of pain and doubt, and the negativity of the resentment of my parents abandoning me and abusing me made my empty shell full of despair, and I tried to fill my empty shell with love and happiness, but it was really difficult for me to do that at that time. And I was a cheerleader for 4 years. That was 3 years in junior high and 1 year in high school. And I was a queen of the rally squad in junior high. And I worked at the Arctic Circle, part of the later years of high school.
The Arctic Circle was a hamburger joint, wasn't it?
Yes.
In Roseburg?
Roseburg, yeah.
So you had what sounds like a fairly full social life and everything, but still you were dealing with issues at home, which sounds like a home where the relationships were not good, and it seems there was some violence, too. It seems like the answer for everybody for anything was to hit each other. Once you got away from your family, though, and you were 100 miles away at what's now Southern Oregon University, did you feel like you could blossom and you know, be your own person off by yourself?
Yes, I did. I mean, when I got to Southern Oregon University, it was my hippie years, and during the hippie era, there were drugs, free love, flower children, and the phrase, ain't it strange, that were topics of the day. And I wore a tan leather vest with a fringe hanging from the armpits and chest, and I drove around in a white Studebaker with flower decals on the top and sides of it, and I fought for equal pay. And I did a skit with my sister at Brit Student Union. We danced to Time Has Come Today by the Chamber Brothers, and I did a handstand and walked around her in a circle with on my hands, and she snapped to her fingers to Time Has Come Today. And we went out to Emigrant Lake during spring break and really had fun unwinding there for spring break. And we went to Mount Ashland to ski. And I took classes on this most beautiful campus, Southern Oregon College, and worked as a switchboard operator, connecting professors and students with a lever and a cord and a board. At Churchill Hall, and
so you had. It sounds like you had the full hippie experience, for lack of a better term. But and I presume then, and you, as you point out in the book, you did end up using some drugs as well. I mean, given your overall mental condition plus drugs, I mean, how did that come out?
Well, I experimented with drugs. I wasn't really hooked on drugs. I was going through a period where I had a boyfriend, and we were pretty steady, and I was hooked on him and became sweaty and insecure when we broke up. So I took Benny's and smoked pot once in a while, but I finally gave all of that up in my latter years.
Let us take a call. We have Tara in Cave Junction on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Sherry Joyner. Her book is Sherry Goes Sane.
Hi, Sherry. Thank you for speaking about your experience. I, from the perspective of a family member of somebody who is struggling with schizoaffective disorder, am wondering if you have any advice or resources for those who are cohabitating with somebody who's struggling with this.
Great question. Thanks for that, Tara. Appreciate it. Sherry, what can you offer?
Yes, they can go to NAMI, which is the National Alliance of Mental Illness, and there's peer groups where they can talk about their experiences with their peers in that group, or learn interpersonal relationships, or become an active member, or become a peer-to-peer specialist. Or they can go to a NAMI Basics meeting where you can talk about any type of mental illness there. Or your family member can get involved with family to family, and you learn about your loved ones and your treatments and the evaluations of your family member. And it's a good source. NAMI is a really good source. And I just say, keeping literature in your home about mental illness can help that person if he or she doesn't want to go for help. And just talking to a good friend about your loved one and getting some advice or perspective. Or
all right, so NAMI is definitely a good place to go. We did talk to Pat Garut, who's the president of the Southern Oregon chapter of NAMI, and I can give that number for folks in Jackson and Josephine counties like Tara interested in getting some more information. So NAMI of Southern Oregon is based in Medford, and the phone number there is 541-774-7872. I'll make sure we put that up on Facebook later today. It's 541-774-7872 for Jackson and Josephine County. You can go online and look for NAMI in your community. So this brings up a question that certainly comes out of Tara's point, which is, you know, it can be difficult to live with somebody with schizoaffective disorder. How have your relationships been as an adult, Sherry?
Well, right now, as an adult, I have great relationships with people. I am keeping my relationships. I'm not cutting anybody off like I used to when I was young and hitchhiking and doing outlandish things. And I have a sister that I keep up a great relationship with her. She's my almost my mainstay, and my husband is very supportive of me. He's emotionally supportive of me. And I try to be an emotional support to people. I try to be a leader to people, to help people out of this chaos with maybe suicide attempts or the family suicide or women's discrimination or women's abuse. Or I try to help people with schizoaffective disorder or schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. That's why I have written my book, Sherry Goes Sane, Living a Life with Schizoaffective Disorder, which is available on Amazon.com and Create Space and Barnes & Noble through Kindle and paperback. And I just enjoy people in my life. I just love to help them. I love to be an impact on a person.
So was it ever any holding back on your part? It sounds like you have really taken to this task of spreading your story pretty readily, that you're comfortable with talking to groups and, in fact, writing this book about what you've gone through.
No, I don't think anything's holding me back. I just got a goal in mind, and I want to achieve my goal, and that's to help as many people as possible with this disorder and help them just to know that they can make it in the real world.
Well, depression is certainly part of schizoaffective disorder, and you've mentioned having some periods of fairly deep depression yourself. Were you ever suicidal?
I tried to commit suicide 4 times.
Well, we're glad you did not succeed, but, I mean, how close was it to between you and death?
It was very close to death. I tried to strangle myself once, and I stabbed myself with a screwdriver, and I laid in the middle of the freeway trying to get ran over, and I tried to overdose on one of my medications.
You mentioned that you were 21, so that would have been the early 70s when you were first locked up in the Oregon State Hospital. It is much harder these days to get a commitment order on somebody. Have you been locked up against your will multiple times?
What I did was I signed myself in to Salem because I knew things were getting so bad that I had no alternative but to sign myself in. And a couple of times that I was hospitalized, I was court ordered with my consent. And then another time, the fifth time I was hospitalized, I just signed myself in, and it wasn't hard to do because. You know, they knew I was off. I kept calling the police on myself because I knew something was wrong.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that tends to be the way that people go when they're getting in trouble here. Talk about Sherry's master plan, the document that really sort of paved the way for your comeback and your eventual stability.
Yes, I created Sherry's master plan and with symbols and charts and a schedule of the day, I created my activity of the day. With an M equals master and a P equals pleasure and a scale from 1 to 10. And I found out how much I accomplished during the day, and I could spot when I was going out of control.
And so it was just a matter of tracking yourself in a sense.
Yes, it was.
And and do you still use Sherry's master plan? Is it a daily ritual for you?
No, I turned it into something as an email section of the plan, and I email my doctor when I get in trouble. So I use it as that.
Well, you talked about how the drug cocktail of Geodon, Seroquel, and lithium helped stabilize you. Did you get much talk therapy down the years, though?
Talk therapy?
Yeah, counseling.
Oh, I see a counselor every month, and I see a doctor, a psychiatrist every month. And the counselor asked me questions about why or how am I doing in order to elicit a response from me to figure out how I can better my life and do better each day. He went through self-hypnosis with me one time, and he role-plays with me, like if I am having trouble with someone someday or something bothers me, then he role-plays with me, and I sheds perspective on life for me.
All right, so still constant attention to the schizoaffective disorder. Sherry Goes Sane is the book. Sherry Joyner wrote it. The subtitle of the book, Living a Life with Schizoaffective Disorder. Sherry Joyner, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
All right, take care of yourself. I want to remind our listeners on the Oregon side that Election Day, primary Election Day, May 20th, is coming up next Tuesday. Today is listed as the last day in which you can effectively mail your ballot and be ensured that it will arrive in time to be counted on Tuesday. So if you're planning on voting in the May 20th primary and still have your ballot in your hand, make sure you get a stamp on it, get it in a mailbox today. Otherwise, you're going to have to take it to a drop box or directly to the county clerk's office in your county in time to be counted by 8 o'clock on Tuesday night. That'll do it for today's Jefferson Exchange. Coming up on Monday on the Jefferson Exchange at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about the restoration of Medco No. 4, an old steam locomotive owned once by the Medford Corporation. We'll move from steam locomotives to airplanes as we talk about the flights leaving Klamath Falls. Klamath Falls could be left without air service in the very near future. And then at 9 o'clock, we'll talk to somebody who can see a collapse coming in the economic system once again. His book is called The Death of Money. That is all coming up Monday on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duren. Our student assistant at the controls today, Reed Newland. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Join us again Monday at 8 for another edition of the Jefferson Exchange. And please have a great weekend.